Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hey guys, welcome to this week's edition of Welcome to Matlanta. We appreciate you guys making us your weekly destination to catch up with some of our favorite Atlanta and Georgia guests, both past and present. Let's not waste any time. Let's get to this week's edition of Welcome to Matlanta.
All right, we're going to play Getting to Know Chris Domino. Chris, I want you to assume that nobody has ever heard Chris Domino before. They just moved here, or right, they just turned on the radio station and have never heard Chris. Because I know you and I have known each other a long time, but I don't feel like I know the full story. Tell me about chiropractic school, and was Chris Domino really, like, you were going to be a chiropractor before this? Yeah. Like, what was, there a, like, a want growing up to do that? What led you to that?
That's so funny you say that, because the reason it ended up being chiropractic school, long story short, 29, I'd been a headhunter, this thing called headhunting. What it is in an engineering world, I'd go take guys, and I'd find them jobs at Johnson & Johnson, Bristol-Myers Squibb, Merck. I did it for like 8.5 years, but I had to wear a tie a lot of days, and I was pretty miserable at a certain point. And it was a commission job. So when it was going well, it was going really well. And I was making really good money in my early 20s, but I just got a little bit burned out. So at 29, I said, I'm going to go back to school, but I'm going to go to law school. This is what I've wanted to do. I'm going to go to law school. So I literally enroll, and I'm going to go to school. And then my buddy, who was, and I know, believe me, this is so New Jersey, he was an electrician in Union 3 in New York. Working in Times Square, and there was a ton of work in Times Square back then because they were cleaning the whole thing up. He says, the winter's outside these buildings, 48 stories up. He said, come on, we'll go to chiropractic school. Now, I didn't remember this, but he reminded me, and he might have been lying, that like 11 years before that, when we were 18, we had talked about this. And look, Italian guys in New Jersey being chiropractors, how cliche can you be? He convinced me after I had taken the LSATs, literally after I had taken the LSATs, that no, I need to go to chiropractic school. He went to Davenport, Iowa. I said, I can't do that. I came to Atlanta for a weekend. I said, well, I could do this. And then I enrolled in Life College, and I'm not lying, July 7th, 1993, I took my last final exam in chemistry, summer class at Rutgers, with my Jeep hooked up to the moving truck, back corner of the parking lot. I left before my grade was issued to me because I had to drive overnight to get to Atlanta to register on July 8th.
So what did you know about Atlanta other than it's a great place to, you know, for a single guy, it's good weather, but what else did you know about Atlanta?
I didn't know. I knew it wasn't Davenport, Iowa. I knew it wasn't Syracuse, New York, where I had been. There was another chiropractic school. There was only like 7 in the country. And there was one in California that I guess, but that California. And I'm not a kid. I wasn't 18. I was 31 years old. But California seemed like a really long haul. But Atlanta seemed like it had enough. And I remember, Matt, swear to God, the second day I think I didn't even do it the first weekend I was here before I officially moved here. I think I remember the sign was 1.4 million was the citizenship of Atlanta outside of the hospital on Peachtree Road. Does that still exist, by the way? Do they still keep count of how many people live in Atlanta?
I know for the longest time they did, because it's about 5 times that now.
Yeah, I remember it was 1.4, and it seemed like a quiet little gem, like the biggest small city in America, yep, perhaps, with great weather on top of everything else. And that was literally how I ended up in Atlanta.
So what did Mom and Dad think of their son packing up the Jeep and heading to Atlanta?
That's a great question. I'll tell you what they were upset about. I had 9 credits to go to get my degree. And at that point, you had to do your last 15 at school. And they wanted me to say, please just finish. Just get the degree. I was like, I got to go. So I think they were upset about that. I might have more credits than anybody in America without an official degree beyond an associate's. I think I have like 168 credits without a specific degree. So they weren't happy about that. The idea of moving, I think they were okay with it. Now, when are you going to ask me about the part, what did I move down here by myself?
Well, I didn't want to get in your personal business. Huh. Like, if you want to share, I'm more than willing to, like, all right, I'll ask the question then. Did you move down here by yourself?
No. I did for a little bit, but then my first wife moved down here with me. She was a nurse, had a great job in New Jersey, and she left. And the plan was, and this is how, and look, here are the moments that everybody, you turn left, you turn right. Maybe you stay straight for a little bit longer, but then eventually you're going to have to turn left or right. Our plan was we would move back to New Jersey. That was the deal. It wasn't even a plan. That was the deal. I stumbled into radio. She doesn't want to live here. I don't want to go back because I'm kind of like, this is kind of nice. The weather's great. I think I'm actually getting into all these games for free. Mm-hmm. Who the hell wouldn't want to stay here? And then that sort of meant we were going to go our separate ways.
All right. So you said you stumbled into radio, and I've heard you tell the story before, but like in the radio business is weird, right? There's TV, you do a tape and you know, you work in small markets and you do all that stuff. Radio, it can be any different number of ways you get in. So you were a caller to Pharrell's show back in the early 90s, and the program director at the time of 680 The Fan heard you, and like the rest sort of just happened?
Yeah. Scott didn't know my name. The producer, Robert Wolf, I still remember because Robert Wolf was the guy that really started all this. He was Scott Pharrell's producer, big Georgia fan, lives up in the Carolinas now. The PD came down. He had worked in both Philadelphia and New York and said, I'm looking for something. I don't know what it is. And I would call every few weeks just to really just have a good time and really bust Scott Pharrell's balls is really what it was. And I would hang up on him and he would say, let me ask you a question. I said, we don't have that kind of relationship yet. And I would hang up because I was just goofing. You know, I was just entertaining myself while I was stuck in traffic some days or sitting at the apartment some days. So this guy, Robert Wolf, said, there's a guy who calls, and Scott calls him Jersey. No idea what his name is, no idea what his story is, none of it. He said, but the next time, he said, do you have a number? He goes, no, I just, you know, and I called a few weeks later, and I legitimately was asked to meet at the Lodge on a Thursday afternoon to meet Scott in person and Mike Thompson in person as well, the program director.
So you meet them, and did you have any inclination of what was going to happen?
No. And I didn't even realize because that Thursday they said, here's what we're going to do. We want you to come in Sunday. And I said, okay. And I didn't know what that meant. But I was like, sure, I'm up for anything. I had bartended. And I swear to God, that's why I got hired. And Mike Thompson eventually told me, if you forget you were ever a bartender, I will fire you very quickly. But the Sunday night, Matt, I went in with four other guys for what I guess was a tryout. Like, does that happen on radio? I don't even know.
It sounds like tryout, audition. It sounds like a little something, yeah.
So the guy who was hosting absolutely thought he had the job. No doubt about it. Whatever job was open. I didn't even know there was a job. But this is the God's honest truth, and I've told the story. So there's five of us in the studio, and I'm the only guy to his left. There's three to his right. And he starts to totally turn his back to me. Totally. Like, I don't know who you are. He probably heard that I was a caller. So he just said, dismissed. Now I got to make sure that I'm better than these three guys. We go to a break after the first hour. And I looked at him and I said, I don't think I really want to mention his name now, but I said, I'm going to tell you, I just became your worst nightmare. And I said, no, we don't have to talk about it. I just became your worst nightmare. The next 2 hours, he tried to turn his chair to me a few times to like pay attention to me. And I kept I gave him the throat slash. I was like, it's too late. It's over. It's over. Don't look at me. It's over. And I don't even know why I did it. I just thought I was sort of busting someone's balls. And then it was over. Nothing on Monday. And on Tuesday, he called. And I swear Mike Thompson said to me, I was a little bit worried in the first hour. But the last 2 hours, and next thing you know, it was come on in and meet both Herb White and Terrence Moore.
The elevator
and I guess
Decatur.
It began.
Yeah. So you started sitting in on shows from there?
Matt, I was officially doing afternoon drive 3 days a week while I was still going to chiropractic school. Because I came in July. This was late September of 93. So a few months after I moved here, I was working afternoon drive 3 days a week with Herb White in, I guess, and I didn't even know this, what a top 10 market was back then. I'm not dumb. I could figure out what it means as a phrase. But I didn't know what that really meant, being on in a top 10 market.
I want to talk about one of our great sponsors at the Rhodes Group. Yes, my buddy Clayton Rhodes and the Rhodes Group are a proud sponsor of us here at Welcome to Atlanta, and they're also my insurance company. It was about, I don't know, 4 or 5 months ago now that I finally realized, why am I paying so much for my home and car insurance?
I don't think we realize as the consumer we should be shopping or having somebody in a professional setting shop those rates for us. So I had the professionals at the Rhodes Group shop my rates, and they ended up saving me a boatload of money. I'm talking about $2,000 for my home and car insurance. By now, you guys know it's a great time to refinance your home. You see all those rates? Well, you might not know it's also a great time to shop your home insurance. Home insurance rates creep up every year, and the only way to get the best policy and the best rate is to work with an independent insurance agency like the Rhodes Group. Here's the deal. You can get up to 10 insurance quotes in 10 minutes from the Rhodes Group at no cost to you. You want to visit them online. I got a special landing page for you. You can go to rhodes-group.com/churnoff. It's spelled R-H-O-A-D-S. rhodes-group.com/churnoff. You can also see the link up at Real Matt Lanna on Twitter. They're my insurance company. They're going to do this at no cost to you, and you're going to end up saving a boatload. The Rhodes Group is the answer to saving money and getting the best in insurance coverage. Again, the Rhodes Group is the place you want to go. Tell them Matt sent you. Go to rhodes-group.com/churnoff.
Which is probably sometimes is better, right? You just, yeah. You're kind of just doing the gig. Now, again, I don't want to get in your pocket. You don't have to share.
Yeah.
Were they like paying you per show, or like what was happening then?
That's a great question. It's funny. I tried to think about a couple of those things. You know what's amazing? Like, you're probably like this too. There are certain things that I know minutia on. Detail, it's so incredible. There are other things I can't remember anything, and I don't have much in between these days. So I don't know what I was getting. I do know this, though. I had an ability to make money when I didn't think I was going to be making money going to school, right? Like, I was getting a paycheck while I was going to school, and I wasn't bartending, and I wasn't, you know, doing other things that I thought I might have to do if I needed income while I was in school.
All right, well, so let's test the memory. Do you remember the first game that you said, and I'll use your phrase, you got in for free with a credential?
Yeah, it was an Atlanta Hawks game. I shouldn't say that. I got a temporary to go see a couple of Braves games at the end of 93, and I did go to a postseason game. That's the year they lose to Philadelphia. So I did go on a credential, so I'm lying. It was Braves, end of September into October. The first time I remember getting a laminated, like to me, I say it all the time, for guys in our business, Christmas morning is every day you get a credential. I got a Hawks credential for that 93-94 season. And that was, and back then, here's how old and how long ago it was. Press row was right behind the visitor's bench.
Sure.
And it was unbelievable to actually call my buddies and say, you will not believe what I'm hearing because I'm close enough to hear at an NBA basketball game.
And you're watching, in that era, you're watching Michael and,
yes,
you know, Larry and, yes, Charles, like every night from 10 feet away.
And I'm watching Pat Riley on a knee with a whiteboard, and I'm yeah, it was incredible. It was unbelievable to think. And again, probably a story that a lot of guys in this business or a lot of guys listening now, I was so used to sitting three rows from the top when I went to a game. If we splurged for the Big East tournament, maybe we were sitting in the middle level in Madison Square Garden, but not often. And the idea that instead of turning right to go up, I was turning left to go lower was really an incredible thing for a long, long time.
Well, I know what it was like for the first time to go into like a Braves clubhouse. Mm-hmm. It was 1997. I'm 20 years old, yep, and there are Hall of Famers everywhere. So I kind of got that. You know, you sort of have I don't belong here feel, and I just want to fit in. What was your first locker room experience?
John Smoltz. And it was, now that I know that I was in, and I introduced myself. And John, who will tell you, this format was not good for the young John Smoltz. John had rabbit ears. And John said that he would be screaming at his radio. He admits it to this day. It's amazing he works in media and is as good and successful as he is when he hated this format. He thought it was just a bunch of nonsense. He literally had heard me, and he said, hey, you have an opinion. Good for you. You can't have an opinion and not show up here. He said, you can say whatever you want as long as you're here the next day and the day after that and the day after that. And I swear, I really have tried to live by that as much as possible. And that was the first thing I ever heard when I was in a locker room.
That's interesting. So, like, my memory's fuzzy on this, but Chris, yeah, I'm 99% sure I turned on my radio in the morning and heard you, and in the afternoon. I heard you. Were you doing double shifts?
I did.
Back at 680?
I did. There was an issue. They tried to put together a morning show, and they realized, I want to say a day, maybe I'll say two, that it wasn't going to work. And they said, listen, how's the school thing? You know, what's your schedule? I said, here's what it is. All right, can you do this? And then I ended up doing both morning and afternoons. Again, as I was told, in a top 10 market, which is, you're not supposed to do that in Dothan. You're not supposed to do that in, you know, some outlying post in Michigan, let alone in a big city. Sure. And the format was really brand new, Matt.
Oh, it was. Like, I mean, yeah, I mean, Atlanta, you didn't come here till 93. I know New York.
93. Do you remember how old are you in 93?
I was 16 when it got here, and I was so excited, the notion we were going to have sports to listen to all day.
Flip the switch, and all of a sudden you had a sports talk radio station. I grew up with it, or at least not, I didn't grow up with it. I'm lying. I was a young adult when it really in 86 when FAN came out in New York. So I wasn't a 12-year-old who experienced it, 15-year-old. I wasn't in the back like these stories you've heard now. I'm going to age you because I know that you're on your second generation of people who've listened to you. So now it's the guy who's got a kid, and the guy says, oh, I was his age when it was on in the car, and I was in the back seat. So I'm on my third generation of that.
That's weird, in reality.
But I didn't hear the format till I was about 23 years old.
Okay, now we're going to really test your memory here.
Go ahead.
Let's go through co-hosts.
Oh God.
Let's, because I distinctly remember there was a Stu Klytenek era.
Yeah.
The former WSB Channel 2 weekend guy.
Yes.
So we'll start before then, because I know you go. So give me, let's just see how many we can go through, Chris Domino, who worked with you through.
So we're talking about basically the cemetery. Who ended up getting buried in some way? Herb White.
Okay.
Terrence Moore. Jack and Janet. Do you remember they were a couple who wrote for the newspaper?
Like Jack Wilkinson, Jack?
Yeah. Yes.
Really?
That was the morning show that I was called in on.
I did not know that part.
Yeah. Yes. Stu Klytenek. Pete Michael. And then there was other stuff. I think that was it, because then the Cellini guy,
okay,
the Cellini guy entered my world. But can I tell you something about the whole co-host thing? Have you ever, and I don't know your relationship with Chuck other than what I think I know about it. Mm-hmm. Have you ever been threatened with lawsuits? Not once, but twice by a co-host?
No.
I was.
No, we've gotten into it. Yeah, anybody who works together for as long as you worked with Nick, or I work with Chuck, or anybody, you're gonna get combative at times. It's normal. But no, I've never had like subpoenas nor like threats. Like what happened there?
Stu Klytenek threatened me twice and said my attorney is on this now.
Stop it.
By the way, hold on, Chris Cotter and Chuck Oliver too. How could I forget? I apologize. I think I just I just blanked it out of my head.
Maybe
for so many
for
reasons.
It's for the best. So wait a minute. So what? Give me the Stu. Like lawsuit threats.
Stu is a very nice guy, but he was having a hard time believing that he was going to be doing radio, not TV. He had done TV for a long time, and he was very entertaining. And I like him as an individual. I really did. But we had Bobby Kremins on one day in the morning, and he kept telling Bobby, he told him this like three times over the course of our conversation with him, Bobby, I'm just doing this till I get back in a TV thing. So I said into a live hot mic, I said, you've got more tapes out than Blockbuster. You got to settle down. This is your life now. And I said, you better be good at it, because this could go away too. And I said it live on the air. And he, and for those of you listening, Blockbuster used to be this place that actually had tapes that you can go into the store and
rent them.
I'm going to watch Back to the Future or whatever it was.
So he did this not once, but twice though.
Twice. There was another time I really did, because I'm not saying I was supposed to be threatened with a lawsuit on this one. I thought it was a bit excessive, but I will tell you it was a little bit closer. He left the show early one day and I made a comment. And I thought, of course, it was all in good fun because we had that type of relationship. And I found out very quickly we didn't.
That is hysterical.
Yeah,
I mean, not maybe then. So, all right. So that's the co-host part of it. Management. How were you with your bosses, whether it was Mike Thompson back in the day, or like who's now before WSB? And I want to ask you about that transition in a minute, because they leased the station over to WSB.
Yeah.
But who was your boss other than Mike Thompson when you came in at 680 back then?
Couldn't tell you. I think it was Mike Thompson. I think it was Mike Thompson because, Matt, the good news is I would leave and go to school, or I would come in from school, and I don't even know who the bosses were. Like, I remember we were in the CNN Center.
Right.
We were like fish in an aquarium. Our studio window was right there. So game nights, it was great. Concert nights. I mean, I met people who, you know, Grateful Dead fans. We'd pull them in studio. I swear to you, I'd see Stan Kasten walk by. I'd see Paul Orndorff, and we'd wave them in, and they would come into the studio. And when I was doing afternoons, you know, 6 o'clock when people were showing up for Hawks games or concerts. It was an unbelievable people-watching experience.
Yeah, it's a great setup. But for people who don't know, yeah, there was like a window to the CNN Center inside where that food court area is, and you could see everybody.
Yep.
All right, so as I mentioned, and maybe maybe this is a good thing. I don't know how much you cared about it at the time or like even like considered it. So when the Dickies leased 680 at that point to WSB Radio, what did you know of it and what did it mean for you?
So I knew that we were going to be in a different building. We were in the old White Columns building. It was a certainly storied history and tradition. And I'll give you a story in a second that lets you know the company that I was keeping. But there was a guy who was running it by the name of Nick Trigoni who was great to me. Oh, I hope he's retired and happy down in Florida. I think Nick did very well for himself. There was a guy named Greg Mascheri, and I'm missing somebody, and I apologize for it. But Nick Trigoni was the guy who really, he really liked me. He had heard me talking about some Brave stuff, and he knew that I was down there a lot. His family, I think, were season ticket holders, and he took a liking to me because I think he thought that I was different in a good way, and WSB could have used a little bit of different. Because remember, he had Neil Bortz. Mm-hmm. So our office space, we had like a little U-shaped office. Neil Bortz, Clark Howard, and then I was in an office with Jeff Van Note and Larry Munson. Like, I had whatever, I don't even know if I had stuff in the office, but I was allowed to go sort of sit in there and crash there before or after shows.
So, and I'm trying to do the math on this. Like, Van Note and Munson did afternoons when SB took it over. So you're doing mornings at this point?
Yeah, I was doing mornings, but here's what would happen. When Larry had to do Fridays during football season, Jeff Van Note and I would go over to a place called Barnacles on Tilly Mill.
Sure.
And we did Friday afternoons together. And I worked with, by the way, Van Note was a co-host. I should, again, I've forgotten about the SB stuff. But Jeff Van Note and I did a show. Larry was there once in a while, but Jeff.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.
Van Ote and I also did a show when Larry was doing, not full-time, he was doing more in the way of commentaries and things like that.
So how well did you get to know, like, you worked with Jeff, and I love Jeff. Yeah. How much did you get a chance to work with Larry, and what kind of relationship did you guys have?
It's one of the, I'm both ecstatic about it, but I also kick myself about it. He thought I was different. If Nick Trigoni thought I was different, Larry Munson looked at me like I was from another planet. But I think he got a kick out of that because he would tell stories. This is a true story about Larry Munson. Larry Munson, no short of six times, looked at me when we were on the air together and would say, I can't believe I'm about to tell this. Or he would start to say something, and halfway through he said, I should stop now. And then there was no way he was going to stop, and I was certainly not going to let him stop. He told just two quick stories. He told a story of a nurse in World War II that got blown up. She was from New Jersey. And he talked very fondly of her. And he looked at me and said, can you believe they blew her up? I said, well, yeah, Larry, it was war. That was sort of what was going on. But he started to like get a little melancholy and thinking about this woman and the accent. He would describe her accent, and she was so different. So I got those types of things out of him. And then I got other things out of him that I swear to you had to stay off air, which were some of the funniest conversations I've ever had in my life.
Oh, I've heard some of these things, but yeah, that, and maybe it's best for everybody that they remain off
air. But he was so good to me, Matt. Like, he legitimately, I'll just give one more because my wife doesn't care. Before I was married, I went to one of the WSB Christmas parties with somebody. And for, I'd say, a minimum of 3 years, even after I was married, Larry was obsessing with the idea that I was not dating this girl anymore. Obsessing. He couldn't believe it. I think one time in front of my wife, how in the hell did you pull that off?
Subtlety was not part of Larry's
And I'd get him a cigar. You know, I knew that, you know, every once in a while, I pretend it was his birthday. And I go, Larry, it's your birthday. Here. I'd buy him like a 3-pack of cigars. He goes, it's not my birthday. I said, it's not what everybody around here is saying. And he just used to get a kick out of it.
I love that.
Maybe surprise him. And Matt, his stories are unbelievable. He played, do you know, did he play the saxophone or the clarinet? What did he play?
I remember hearing something about this, but see, the problem with Larry is I feel like these stories were not told enough. We're not
known enough
about like the other stuff other than the great calls of the games.
I think he played in a band of Frank Sinatra, like the Dorsey Band or something, where Sinatra was singing. And then he told me, like, passing by, yeah, I went fishing with Ted Williams. Like up in Minnesota, they went fishing. I was like, what? Yeah. And then that would be it. But no, that's not where we end stories like this.
I want to talk about one of our great sponsors at the Rhodes Group. Yes, my buddy Clayton Rhodes and the Rhodes Group are a proud sponsor of us here at Welcome to Atlanta. And they're also my insurance company. It was about, I don't know, 4 or 5 months ago now that I finally realized, why am I paying so much for my home and car insurance? I don't think we realize as the consumer we should be shopping or having somebody in a professional setting shop those rates for us. So I had the professionals at the Rhodes Group shop my rates, and they ended up saving me a boatload of money. I'm talking about $2,000 for my home and car insurance. By now, you guys know it's a great time to refinance your home. You see all those rates. Well, you might not know it's also a great time to shop your home insurance. Home insurance rates creep up every year, and the only way to get the best policy and the best rate is to work with an independent insurance agency like the Rhodes Group. Here's the deal. You can get up to 10 insurance quotes in 10 minutes from the Rhodes Group at no cost to you. You want to visit them online. I got a special landing page for you. You can go to rhodes-group.com/churnoff. It's spelled R-H-O-A-D-S. rhodes-group.com/churnoff. You can also see the link up at Real Matt Lanna on Twitter. They're my insurance company. They're going to do this at no cost to you, and you're going to end up saving a boatload. The Rhodes Group is the answer to saving money and getting the best in insurance coverage. Again, the Rhodes Group is the place you want to go. Tell them Matt sent you. Go to rhodes-group.com/churnoff.
But that man was a treasure, just a treasure. So I've asked you this before, and you've told it, but I want to, for the new listeners who have not heard this, like, nobody should ever go through this, but you're doing mornings at 6:80.
Yeah.
And this is back in the day when a newspaper would actually come out. There'd be two editions of the paper, an early and a later edition. And you found out about the end of that radio station because somebody, not you, somebody read in the paper that you were about to lose your job.
Yes. It was the AJC late edition. So it's August, and I'll never forget, it's a Friday, and the Braves are at home, and a guy calls up and says, hey, man, how you doing? I was like, great, Friday, Buckhead, tonight, Braves this weekend, let's go. And he said, oh, no, what about what? I said, what about what? He said, well, it says the station is going away. I said, what are you talking about? The late edition had a story that 680 WCNN was closing down the sports talk format. And it was in the paper, and I'm on the air, and now it's like 7:15. And Matt, what's the rule in radio? Once somebody finds out, they're not going to be working at that station.
Oh, yeah, they're not allowed to remain on the radio.
Right. So we're supposed to be off at 10. So I don't know how or why they trusted me to actually stay on the air till 10 o'clock, and we took boatloads of phone calls saying, I can't believe this, I can't. So it was like the infamous, I don't know, who was talking about it just the other day? You're watching your own funeral.
Oh,
you're a member of your own funeral.
Yeah, Dimitrov said it.
You're a member of your own funeral. People are eulogizing you as they've told you that you're going to be escorted out the building. Now, true story, the old security guy there who I had met, and let's just say that I had met him for a couple of different reasons. There would be some Tuesday or Thursday nights in Buckhead. I would go right to WSB. I wouldn't go home. I was living in Marietta, and it was too far, and I just said, it's late, I'll just go there, and I'll crash. There was a couch. So I knew the security man there, and he was older. And they actually came to me and they said, you're doing great, but are we going to need to get, and let's just say his name was Pete, the security guy, to help you out the building? I said, with all due respect, if I wanted to do something to Pete or not have Pete stop me from doing something to you, what is really going to happen here? So they let me stay until 10. I don't know. I think he had a flashlight.
Okay, well, that'll do it.
I think he had a flashlight he could have hit me with, but he was old and he liked me. I don't think he was going to do it. But they legitimately let me stand. And at 10 o'clock, by the way, the format was gone. Nobody else was on air that
That's
day.
That's insane. Wait, yeah. So how did they not tell you guys or like did it leak? I mean, how does that happen?
Yeah, something happened. They were supposed to be telling us after everybody. I think it was maybe even after supposed to be at 10 o'clock. Now, I'll go back to Nick Dragone, the guy who ran the whole thing. He called me immediately and said, look, I'm going to find something for you to do. I want you to stay on. I know that the format is gone. They put me on. Think about this. They put me on WSB. Is it, what, third most powerful stick in the nation?
Easily.
Fifth most powerful?
Easily.
I don't even know the wattage. You're better.
You could hear that at a time. I don't know how it works now. But you could hear WSB in something like 38 states at night.
Right. And I remember, this is the God's honest truth, when the Braves were in spring training at night, I could hear WSB down in southern Florida. When they were in West Palm, you could hear WSB. And you could hear it in about 38 states, might have been the actual number that they talked about. But I don't know how any of it works. Nick Dragone put me on Sunday nights, right before the Bob Costas. Remember Costas Coast to Coast?
Sure.
Yep. And that was the impetus for a lot of why I wanted to do the hardball type conversations and everybody else, because being on Sunday night, it gave me a little bit of a freedom. They said you could do whatever you want. We do want some Brave spin, but you could do whatever you want. Just have a good time with it. And that was the beginning of really trying to find people to talk to. Anybody that I thought was interesting in any field was sort of the direction I wanted to go.
So you got a chance to meet Larry over there. What about your relationship with Skip Carey?
He was unbelievable to me. I can't believe, look, I'll call him the elder statesman. Because they really could have said, hey, you didn't do your dues. You didn't pay your dues. You stumbled into this thing. This caller thing was such nonsense. I did pregame for the Braves, and all I was supposed to do was a segment where outside, hey, here's what we're giving away today. Hey, come by this gate, and there's this. Skip immediately, and I'm going to tell you, Ernie and Pete were unbelievable to me too, but Skip, it was his segment where it was, hey, let's throw down and find out what's going on around, you know, Turner Field. Around Fulton County Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And Skip would start asking me questions about the matchup that night, the pitching matchup that night. And I would end up doing literally a few minutes with him talking about the game. And that was his way of, I don't know, you know, can you get a blessing? You know what I mean? Like you're a made man.
Oh,
if
sure,
Larry
yeah.
Munson and Skip Carey go, you're good with us?
That's as good as it gets, by the way. I mean, you're talking about, like, for my youth and my child and people
right.
my age who are now in our 40s who grew up on those two, and I'll mention Al Seraldo kind of in that mm-hmm. too. It was like, I mean, that's as good as it gets.
He didn't have to do that, though. And I knew that, and he knew that. But the idea that this turned into 3 and 4 and 5 minute segments where I was just kind of like, okay. And again, he didn't have to. But then when I would see, you know, Pete Van Wieren and I would see Ernie Sr., it was unbelievable. And I think they appreciated it because you did this for a long time. Being down in the building mattered to guys like that.
Yeah, they get used to seeing your face. There's no doubt. And I'll say this about Skip. Like, you and I both know Glenn Diamond is a producer mm-hmm. for a million years. If Skip didn't like you,
he
was not going to be shy. You know, it was just Skip was going to be Skip.
Do you want to know how far it went? I don't know what year. This is where I get fuzzy. And maybe WGST, remember when they had the Braves for a while?
Sure.
Okay. I was actually offered a chance to go over there. And I found out that Pete Van Wieren was a guy who said, hey, if you're going to bring anybody else over to do anything, whatever it was, pregame, postgame, whatever it was going to be, he was the one that said, go after that guy. And again, did not have to do that at all. But when I got a call from GST, I found out a little bit after that it was Pete as much as anybody that said, go get him.
That's class act too, as anybody should
no
find.
Doubt.
So, okay, here's my recollection, and I want your side of things, because mm-hmm. like the weirdest thing to me is when we started the station, and I'm a know-nothing intern. I'm just, you know, minding my own business. But I used to remember we'd be out at the lodge or some places on Thursday night and be like, I'm pretty sure that's Domino, and he works for another station, mm-hmm. and you'd be at our remotes.
Yeah.
Which I thought, is this normal in radio? I had no idea. So you had a relationship with Steak, obviously, from your days together at 680. So when the station goes under, when 680 decides we're going to just kill the sports format, like, what's the contract situation? Because how quickly did you guys start talking about coming over?
So can I give you the real sort of, and if you talk to Steak or Andrew Saltzman or anybody else about it. So I got nervous because they were talking about starting a station, but I wasn't really sure if it was going to happen. And there was a night of the Georgia Tech game. Stake is telling me it's going to happen. So he said, what about names? You know, let's talk. And I did. I slid him a piece of paper that said the zone. That's a true story.
Oh, he's told me. Yeah, you came up with a name.
But here's the problem. I wasn't sure if they were really ever going to pull it off. And again, the aforementioned Nick Tregoni came over to me and said, why don't we put you under contract? And I was kind of like, oh, God. And this is SB, and this is sort of. And I signed a contract. So now Stake and Andrew are like, oh, my God, what the hell did you just do? Because we want you over here to be a part of this. And I said, well, there really hasn't been anything that's been definitive yet. I will say this again, Nick Tregoni, Greg Moscheri, they let me out. They let me out. And you want to talk about something that doesn't happen very often. They were okay with it. They just said, I had to wait a little bit. I had to sit a little bit. And because they just said, we can't let you do this and not do your 30 days or 45 days, whatever. But they let me out of what was another couple of years on a contract. Now, I thought I was taking a shot because SB was certainly going to be a little bit more stable. But I also knew that being on a show every day and having an ability to go to games the way that I wanted to was going to be afforded at 790, not there.
So, and this is funny to me because I remember, and I know you hated this, but when they brought you over, they did this big to-do with a limo and at the lodge and this bowl, which I know you hated.
Yes.
But, you know, Stake and the one thing about that radio station, there was going to be pomp and
put on a show.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what did you notice? Because that was my first experience in radio, so I didn't have a comparison. You were in the most corporate of corporate environments at SB.
Uh-huh.
Like, it couldn't be more night and day when you came over there.
Matt, think about this. They were asking for a 75-year-old security guy had to escort me out of the building. We didn't have a security guy. I mean, that's really the difference. We didn't have a security guy. And you know, I think we've all said this, and it's not a knock because times change. But the ability to drink on the air or the things that you got away with then, you can never get away with now. It doesn't mean it was necessarily wink, wink better, but I was in a completely different world than what I came from. And I was in a completely different world as to what the radio world has become now. And you've seen, you at least understand that evolution as much as I do.
I mean, and at the time, the first eye-opener I got was when I would sort of moonlight over at the time, Z93, to do some Falcon stuff. And that was a corporately owned radio station. And putting your feet up on the desk in a corporately owned radio station is looked at differently than what we had when we had, you know, tilted kilt girls or...
Yeah.
You know, whatever it might have been with the road shows and all the stuff that happened there. But it was such a great time, and it was a different time, and there was no social media, and it was a different world in radio, which, like you said, doesn't necessarily make it better, but man, for the time, it was fun.
There were no WSB girls. We didn't have a pamphlet. There were not remotes where the WSB girls showed up.
And you weren't at the Cheetah, and you weren't doing shows at, at the lodge where we would have... You know, a couple of hundred guys on a Friday who decided just to dip out of work and not go back.
Right. And Nick and I started to do this show at Beer Garden days, where in the middle of the day, people knew what they were coming to do. They were coming to eat and drink, and so were we. I mean, we were there to eat and drink and get paid. And I think Nick had given me the number. I think we got $150 cash each to do those shows. And Matt, I don't think I left Buckhead most days until 2 o'clock in the morning on Friday. Like, I don't think I left Buckhead. I think I stayed all afternoon. And then you get to know the bartenders and you get to know the bar owners, which, again, blessing and a curse. I knew everybody who owned every bar in Buckhead from my days at Life College, because a lot of the guys that I went to school with were bartenders. World Bar, Lulu's Bait Shack, Mako's.
This, by the way, when Buckhead was still Buckhead.
Oh my God. Yeah. But we would get done with our show in the afternoon, and I remember days where I didn't leave Buckhead till 2 o'clock that morning, and I would spend every dollar of that 150 over the course of the evening.
You spread it around. So when you met Cellini, tell me how you thought. I mean, everybody has a first impression of somebody. How did you think that was going to work?
Well, here's how the radio station worked. Guess where we met?
A bar?
Mako's.
That sounds right.
Mako's. I walked in and I said, there's a girl swinging on a swing right here in the window. I think that was Mako's.
That was
and then
Mako's,
there was
yep.
other people with some ice thing where they were doing shots
yep.
down this ice slide. And then, oh, by the way, here's the guy you're going to be working with on Monday. Because I had gotten out of my contract at that point and I was good to go that Monday. So we met that night. I'd be lying if I said I remember the conversation, but I do sort of remember that it was circled around, let's not overthink this. Because neither one of us really, Now, he had, it's so funny, he had done television. Ooh, and I think he probably threw that in my face that he had done television.
Yeah.
But I think he also told me he was kicked out of the city of Cleveland. So I don't know if I was impressed by that or horrified by that, because I had left Jersey willingly. I'm pretty proud of that. But it was just, let's not overthink this. Let's find out. And we didn't know words like chemistry. We didn't. We were just going to do a show and we were going to see what happens. Now, remember, he did a show before he and I got together. Do you remember the version of the sports talk show he did?
Yeah, he did Chills and Scribe.
Right.
A guy named Mark Gray was a writer. Guess who produced that wonderful show?
Okay, so, you know, I'd forgotten that. So yes, that's right, because you slid in. Yeah. What I was told is,
Chris,
we need...
I was making $7,000 a year. I could not turn that down.
Yeah, well, think about it. I don't know what you remember about that show, but I remember when I was told I was going to be working with Nick, it was, we have to be a little bit looser. Like, that's what I was told. The show has to be a little bit looser. Did Nick put on his journalism voice then, or what was happening then?
It's a great question. I didn't think the show was that sort of buttoned up before that, but again, it was a different time. It was like A-Rod's. It was a very loosey-goosey era, so maybe we weren't loosey-goosey enough.
I think that's what I was told. We got to loosen this up a little bit.
Well, and it wasn't Mark's fault, but Mark, he was just not, like, sort of, you know, he's probably much better doing radio and stuff now, but back then it was a work in progress, I guess I'll put it that way.
Well, he actually was a little bit more studious than I think Sports Talk Radio was supposed to be back
then. That's exactly right. Yeah. That's a good way to put it.
Thank you.
So, all right. So how was the dynamic? Because you're working for Steak, right?
Yes.
Steak's running the station. Andrew Saltzman's one of the other bosses. Like, was it weird ever? Was there ever any uncomfortable stuff? Like, what was the interaction with you
guys? No, because I'm going to tell you, I never felt like they were my bosses. Now, I shouldn't say never. I got called into the principal's office enough times to find out that they were my bosses. But I never thought they sat on us. They didn't sit on us like bosses. And it's the one great thing. I've not had anybody overly sit on me in the 27 years of doing this. And when I tell you I know I'm lucky. When I was doing TV, to show up at TV at night when all the suits have gone home is the best time to be doing TV. I don't remember having bosses who ever felt like bosses. And I know there are not a lot of people who can say that after this many years.
Okay. Then there's a million stories we could get into. But let me ask you about... So 790 goes from the little engine that could and starts making it and doing well. And then before you know it, just the way radio happens, here comes the big corporate entity to take over. So how quickly did you see the difference in the station?
Yeah, you felt it. I mean, look, they had a right to become bosses because they paid for it. Getting called into that office would have been different than called into Andrew Saltzman's. And by the way, I've said this before, but here's how the dynamic worked when Nick and I would get in trouble. And we did things to get in trouble, no doubt about it. Did we threaten people at times? Yes. Did we think it was funny? Yes. Did we find out at times it wasn't? We once said that we will take on anybody at WSB-TV, Monica Kaufman, and three people of her choosing, and we'll beat up anybody in the business. That was our whole thing. Like, we were so stupid. We said we could beat up anybody in the business. But what happened is there were a couple of times with a couple of different incidents that we got called in, and as we were getting dismissed, I found out we're not getting dismissed. Nick would get dismissed, and they would look at me and say, you sit down because you should have known better.
Yeah.
And then I got it more than he did.
I distinctly remember one of those where we put somebody on the air that wasn't supposed to be on the air.
That was one of them.
And there was, I think there might have been a suspension that followed in that one.
There was one.
Yeah.
I had to sit a little bit longer than he did. There was another one when we talked about a boycott of a Super Bowl that didn't seem like much of a boycott to me. And when that was brought up with a guest, and then we were sat down for that one. And I do remember it was the one time, I will say, that I feel pretty good, that I said, you can suspend me. You really can. You can suspend me, but you better make it permanent, because when I come on after a suspension, I'm going to tell this entire story of what happened in this office. And I didn't think I was threatening. The one thing I can say, I got to be able to live with myself. There are other stories, and some of them you sort of know. I got to be able to at least live with myself. And if I was going to catch a suspension for that, I did tell Andrew, you better suspend me permanently, because I'm going to come on the air and tell the story of what just happened in this office. And we ended up not getting suspended.
That's a good way to handle it then. Yeah. Okay. So again, we could go on forever and ever. Let me end with I know what you love, and you've always loved doing the interview.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to ask you about like the best interviews. Mm-hmm. That's too easy. But like, there are some that just for me listening, that I always kind of like. I like interviews that I don't know what's coming out of either the interviewer's mouth or the guest's mouth. And that doesn't happen very much. But when you guys had OJ on,
yeah,
like that one will always stick out to me, because
the little part of my brain kept going, they're talking to a murderer.
Yeah.
But I was glued and wanted to hear every single thing he had to say. So let me start with that one, and then we'll see if there are a couple of others. But, like, how surreal was that conversation with him?
Crazy. It was pretty crazy. And it gets crazier because we lost him. We thought he hung up on us. He called us back, and we did another 20-something minutes after that. And it was really one of the few times, from what I remember, that OJ actually was confronted with the idea that two people speaking to him thought he cut two people's heads off. And,
you guys
and
said
told
as
him
much
so.
To him.
And told him so.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he fell back on the, well, if I'm that guy, why do my neighbors love me? I said, well, maybe they're afraid of you. I'm not really sure. Yeah. But he tried to answer with sort of, you know, well, I'm a swell guy. But it turned out to be about 40 minutes. Because when we thought it was done, he legitimately called us back because he truly had gotten disconnected. He didn't hang up on us.
That interview today, I'm telling you, you could play that in its entirety and people would be glued.
And it was really strange, Matt, because you're right about the whole idea. I think, in my opinion, I was talking to a double murderer. But there was a football thing. And then, look, long story short about the rest of my relationship with OJ, if you remember, there was a time when he came in the studio after that, and he got angry at me, not because I said I thought he killed two people, but because I thought his NFL career was overrated compared to his college career. And he took great exception to that, but not the other thing that I had told him, which was really sort of strange to me.
Well, it's strange, but it's also sociopath. Yeah.
Ding, ding, ding.
Do you remember a couple of other interviews that, again, not great, not like big names, where you were like, this is just weird, whether the conversation or the guest or the whole thing.
So when I was at SB on that Sunday night, I truly did this. I put together a list of 100 people I'd like to speak to. And I said, let your mind go crazy. John Glenn, Sir Edmund Hillary were on that list. And I did end up speaking to both of them, which was pretty crazy. We had John McCain on. We had Jimmy Carter on. So part of what I wanted to do, and I know, look, they were podcasts before podcasts. We called them long-form interviews. Yep. But what did a PD call them for real?
Too long.
A pain in his ass.
Yeah.
That's what a PD called them.
Yeah, there's commercials and whatnot to run.
Right. But I think it was the people like that that you go, wow, I'm speaking to a guy who's halfway around the world who was the first guy to get to the top of Everest. I'm speaking to a guy who was in space when it was basically stick a rocket to your ass, put yourself in a tin can, and shoot yourself straight up. And Jim Lovell was another astronaut, the Apollo 13 astronaut. So as much as I do remember the sports ones, you know, getting to know Kevin Costner has really been interesting over the years because it was certainly the baseball movies, but I had an opportunity to watch a couple of Braves games with him when he was in town filming, and there have been a couple of moments like that. Barkley watching an SEC championship football game. When you get to know somebody well enough where you go, oh, wait, by the way, I can see another side of them. Because isn't that, you were right, Matt, you hit it on the head. George Brett put it best when we did a half hour. He said, listen, I want to thank you. I said, well, I was just about to thank you. He said, no, thank you. No pine tar, no hemorrhoids. And I think you live in a world like I live in a world. He's done that 1,000 times. I don't want to be the 1,001st guy to go down that road with him.
Yeah. I figure if you can go down a different road with it and give somebody a different sense of the person. All right. So let's finish up and we're going to get deep and we're going to get schmaltzy here.
Okay.
When this is all said and done, 2 years, 10 years, 15 years, on your deathbed in 40 years, you're still doing this. You're talking about the 2062 Braves. What do you want people to remember about Chris Domino doing this?
Ooh. This is when you get a little uncomfortable sitting on this side of the table.
I know it.
I've kind of maintained, and I have said this out loud, I'd rather be respected than anything else. Like, that's been the big thing with me. I don't, if you don't like the opinion, if you don't like the delivery, if you don't like my part of the show, I can live with that, but I hope by showing up and asking a tougher question or getting to know people and saying, by the way, that I'm going to deal from the top of the deck, not from the bottom. I like this guy, therefore I root for him, which I think sometimes we all lose sight of. We can still be fans of things. I hope the word respect is at the end of the day, the one that maybe matters the most or the one that maybe sticks because it's supposed to stick when this is done.
I think it's a great way to say it. And we'll leave it right there, Chris. Good stuff. And we'll be listening, and we appreciate the time and the memories.
I feel bad I was not, swinging from a bottle like Captain Jack Sparrow, i.e. Brian Hoyt.
Well, no,
I apologize for not throwing up on myself during this, which, by the way, he did how many weeks ago?
A couple of times.
I have not. Yeah. I have no chance to do the numbers that Brian Hoyt did because I have not thrown up on myself in over 40 years. So I do know that this is different.
Here's where I'll disagree with you.
So we will push this, and just for the sheer like disappointment I know that will be for him, that we will get one more listen and one more download to this just to mess with his head.
I don't know if it's possible. I don't think we've actually talked about the underbelly of being me or you enough during this. As they say, if it bleeds, it leads. I think we took a little bit more straightforward approach. It might blow up in our faces. We'll find out.
Here's where I tell the audience, part two is where Chris talks about killing people. The three murders he committed.
And I'm going to line up. Can I leave a tease?
Sure.
I will tell you about the two celebrities that I'm sure you know their names, that I'm not bragging, because I can get confirmation on this, that I absolutely could have slept with when they came walking through Atlanta. And I'm not kidding. You know both of their names. There's a third, but it hasn't really been confirmed by at least two different parties. I say you don't have confirmation until at least two other people say it. But there were two that I can guarantee you that I could have confirmed by others, and I chose not to.
Here's what I'm going to do then. So when I promote this, that will be the tease at the end of the interview. Chris, I mean, just absolutely blows you away with something you've never heard him talk about before. And you watch what the numbers will go through.
And I promise you know both of their names.
I think I have
a feeling. I'm too much a gentleman, Matt. I've said too much.
Chris, when it's in the book, that's when it all come out. No, yep. I appreciate you doing this. Great
right,
stories.
Matt.
Love hearing
Listen,
about
really
it.
Appreciate it.
Just tell the family hello and stay well.
All right. Good. Thanks.
See you, buddy. Guys, thanks again for joining us. We appreciate it very much. Thanks to the great folks at the Rhodes Group. Remember, the Rhodes Group is where you want to go to have them shop your insurance rates, both car and home. They did it for me at no cost. They will do it for you at no cost, and they can save you a bundle of money. You have nothing to lose and only something to gain with the Rhodes Group. You can go to the Rhodes Group, check out their great website. You can go to my Twitter page and find out the information there with a landing page right over to find out how they can get you 10 quotes as quickly as 10 minutes. Thanks to Brian Murphy for producing the podcast, and thanks to you guys for making us your weekly destination. We'll talk to you next week on Welcome to Madlanta.
Welcome to Atlanta, where the players play, and we ride on them things like every day. Big beats hit streets, see gangsters roaming, and parties don't stop till 8 in the morning.
Welcome to Atlanta, where the players play, and we ride on them things like every day. Big beats hit streets, see gangsters roaming, and parties don't stop till 8 in the morning.
Spring is here, and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
So, Robert, I want to thank you for your time. I just don't think you're the right person for this position.
I don't understand. Was it something I said?
Well, we did a background check on you and found some things of concern.
If you're in charge of hiring for your company, you know how helpful a background screening can be. That's why companies that use Horizon Background Screening make smarter hiring decisions. Don't let the wrong hire put your company at risk. Get the real story on your candidates at horizonscreening.com. Horizonscreening.com.